Welcome back to And Another Thing. I'm Maya Schwader.
And I'm Dara Kennedy. Do you remember where you were the first time you heard about SARS-CoV-2, the novel coronavirus strain that causes COVID-19, and wondering what that was and why it was suddenly circulating around us? Well, Denise Hirst does. The working mother and longtime Providence resident was at a conference in Washington, D.C.
I remembered watching the news this particular morning as I was preparing to head off, and they started to talk about the doctor or the scientist who had discovered coronavirus in Wuhan. And I remember thinking to myself, huh, that's interesting. And that he was very sick and they were worried about, or that he was worried about potential retaliation to his family for exposing the virus, and never thought anything of it again.
Or at least not until a few weeks later, when concerned family members began to discuss precautions that they were sure would soon be necessary in this country. Denise says it didn't seem real to her. It was more like science fiction. But she was soon someone on the front lines of making decisions. Denise Hirst is a member of the Providence School Board.
It was just survival mode. And it was survival mode because not only did I and so many others that I knew had to handle these things professionally in their professional life, but then you also had to worry and think about your personal lives and how you were going to eat and were we going to have enough food and how do we protect ourselves. And when they say we need to shelter in place, what does that mean, right? Like, does that mean that, you know, we're not safe in the grocery stores, that we're not safe, you know, making our daily errands to Walmart or Target? It very much felt like the Twilight Zone.
Denise says she never imagined how long schools or many businesses would remain closed, or how long she would remain at home with her husband and two children. Then last fall, she took what felt like a very minor risk.
We and my family took it very, very seriously. And I went and got my hair cut. I had not gotten my hair cut in months. And I went and I got my hair cut. It was, in hindsight, of course, probably one of the worst decisions that I had ever made. But I had thought that it was a pretty calculated decision, and that I believed my hairdresser, and I still believe to this day, great, because nobody knows, was careful and cognizant. And we wore our masks, and I was there 27 minutes. And by Friday, I was sick.
Denise tested positive for COVID-19, and to make matters worse, her husband has a serious lung condition. He had to move out of the house with one of their children. The other one stayed next door with Denise's mother. Unfortunately, Denise got weaker and weaker.
It was incredibly, incredibly difficult because we were so worried about, you know, how bad was I going to get? What was going to happen the night that the five-year-old spiked a fever? Was my husband going to eventually test positive? To this day, I think about it and I still get the chills. And I'm incredibly grateful to be on the other side of it. We all tested negative the day before Thanksgiving, but I probably didn't start to feel like myself until maybe January. And even then, experienced extreme fatigue, hair loss, leading all the way up into the spring.
Now Denise Hirst is back at work, and her children are back in school, but she's not sure what to think as she watches new cases of COVID-19 pop up and the virus persist.
I still absolutely operate with a level of fear and nervousness. When we look at the numbers in Springfield and what they were the last couple of weeks with the uptick and increase in numbers, you have to be nervous. Right? Because we know that there are breakthrough cases. We know that there are people who have yet to make a decision on being vaccinated. We know that the spread is there. And we also know the devastating effects of the virus. And now we're seeing that it's affecting children at alarming rates. And so that is scary. And it's scary because, one, I know what it is. And I am very nervous for those of us who have had to send our children back to school because we don't have, you know, other options. You know, I think that through all of the devastation that we've encountered as a country, as a people, that there are absolutely opportunities for real positive change, for us to reimagine or re-envision how we do things, in particular, how we educate our children, how we go to work every day. There are many silver linings that can be extracted from what we've had to endure over the course of the last almost 2 years.
The school system where Denise Hurst sends her children has the highest number thus far of positive COVID-19 tests among students and staff of any school system in the state of Massachusetts. The first full weekly tally of school cases showed Springfield had far more than any other city or town. Massachusetts Commissioner of Education Jeff Riley was among those pushing for all schools to return to in-person teaching this fall. He says that environment is essential to providing students the best possible education.
Remote learning last year did not work for our kids. We saw huge impacts, not just academically, but also psychologically. To this day, we still have children that are being warehoused in emergency rooms because there's not a pediatric psych bed available for them. So we know that kids need to be back in school, and that's the safest place for them.
During this first full week of counting, especially here in Springfield, they had 107 positive COVID cases. And in nearby Holyoke, there were 55 student cases in a week. What accounts for those numbers?
You know, I think vaccination rates in various towns may be part of the issue, and you'd have to look underneath that to see. But we know that the most important thing we can do for our kids is to get vaccinated.
And we do know, Commissioner, that the country is pushing vaccinations. We know that the state of Massachusetts is. But when you look in our region here in Western Massachusetts, the message isn't hitting home. How do you combat the high rate of cases with this diverse population here in Western Mass that simply they're not going to get the shots?
You know, I think one of the things we've talked about is to look at a model like Chelsea, where Chelsea has a huge percentage of its population and its students who are eligible vaccinated. And they've really done it at the local level using their community-based organizations. So I think that's a model that people can look to.
You have extended the order that all students wear masks in schools at least through the end of October. What concern does that send to the parents about the safety of students that are actually in the classroom?
You know, I think when we brought kids back to school last spring, we put a mask mandate in place. Because we wanted to make sure that school was a safe place for them and the parents felt comfortable sending their kids back. Obviously, when the summer came and the cases were low, we had a mask optional policy. But with the cases going up, we felt like it was important to put masks back on kids, at least at the beginning of the year, what the trajectory of the virus would be, as well as when the vaccinations would be available for the younger students.
And so is it possible that this mandate will go longer than October?
It's too early to say right now. We just literally put the mandate in. We're going to continue to do what we always do, which is work with the medical community and try to make what we think are the best decisions on behalf of our kids.
Commissioner, in your opinion, what are or what were the benefits to remote learning? Or do you think that there were none at all?
You know, I think based on everything we know now that remote learning across the country was a struggle. We know kids just need to be with each other, right, for their development. There's a socialization process that's crucial for a kid's development. We also have seen the academic losses that took place when kids weren't in a school building. I just think those are things that we really have to take into account while we recognize the third thing, which is that, you know, last year it was proven that transmission in schools was very low.
It's not only students now that are accounting for some of the positive cases. It's also the staff. So how do you speak to them and ensure that they can feel safe and comfortable when maybe they're at home with their own situations, i.e. caring for an elderly parent?
I think we've really tried to ask districts to have staff work with their HR units in each individual town. Remember, everyone has their own bargaining agreements. We know a large majority of our teachers are vaccinated.
Commissioner, are there any plans in place to help the parents of the students that are not going back into school right now?
So individual districts will tailor plans for students. Obviously, there is a requirement to be in school. Some parents have chosen to do homeschooling, which is their right. They just have to make sure that they interact with their district because each district has an approval process that has to take place.
Jeff Riley is the Massachusetts Commissioner of Education. Thank you so much for joining us on And Another Thing.
Thanks for having us.
The push to return to in-person learning means students are back at colleges and universities around Western New England this year. But in order to reopen their campuses, many schools have had to put in place quite a few health and safety precautions, like Elms College in South Hadley, Massachusetts. Jonathan Scully is the vice president of enrollment at Elms College. He says the campus reopening was something that everyone was looking forward to.
This past summer, as we were looking at our options, COVID was waning. It looked good. Numbers were going down. The Delta variant really hadn't come back yet. So we thought we could go back to kind of business as usual and everything would be back to normal. You know, that's what the students had wanted. That's what faculty wanted. It was only obviously recently that we learned of the new spike with the Delta variant.
So with the Delta variant, tell us about the precautions that you're taking at Elms College right now. You've got social distancing. You've got mandatory mask wearing indoors. You've required vaccinations for most students. What else have you got going on?
So we have a COVID task force that meets every single week to go over any new issues that might come up. We also have a task force that meets that consists of members of the president's cabinet every single morning, making sure all the levels are kind of where they need to be to still safely operate the college.
Can you tell us how many cases there have been at Elms so far?
I don't have the exact up-to-date numbers in front of me, but we've had, I believe, less than 10 positives since the beginning of the semester. We have been very, very lucky, and we've also been very prepared. Our Elms Safe protocol, you know, everything you mentioned from the masking to required vaccinations to social distancing has all made a big difference.
Going back for a minute to the vaccine requirement, what kind of reaction did that garner when you announced that that was going to be a requirement?
You know, there were a few people who were not thrilled, but it was overwhelmingly positive. Most of the people that we talked to that we heard from were, you know, very excited we were doing that. It made them feel safer. It made them feel like we were listening to the science, you know, behind, you know, everything that's going on with COVID.
So do you feel like everyone on campus is staying pretty safe?
I do. Yeah. I mean, I'm on campus every single day. I'm constantly walking around, interacting with, you know, faculty, staff, and students. And people are very, very cautious about what they're doing. They've been very good to each other. And I think people are, you know, really following all the protocols we put in place and understand why they're there. No one wants the college to go remote again. Everybody's enjoying this in-person environment. They know that it's, you know, a big part of that is personal responsibility to make sure everybody's following all the protocols.
So one of the narratives of the pandemic and higher education is that schools took a pretty significant financial hit when everything was remote. There was significant revenue lost from room and board. Was that part of the equation when you decided to reopen the campus this past fall?
No, not at all. What we were looking at was the student experience, you know, the educational experience in the classroom. And though we thought our, you know, our synchronous Zoom was a great option during the height of the pandemic, students learn more and do better when they're in person in the classroom. And, you know, that's the experience that they signed up for. You know, particularly science classes, labs, and things like that. We wanted to bring people back in person, but we only did so when we deemed it was safe.
How did Elms do during the pandemic when everything had to be remote?
We came through it remarkably well. You know, we are very fiscally conservative at the college. You know, we make sure to have a relatively large margin in our budget every year. So while it did hurt us, as it did every college, there's no question, we weathered the storm quite well, and we are coming back kind of stronger than ever.
What about kids who still want to remain remote, though? Is there still a population of students who are learning virtually?
So our full-time synchronous Zoom is not going on right now. We do still have online courses as we did before, so those options are still there, again, like they were before the pandemic. But the fully synchronous Zoom classes for every single course that exists is no longer being offered.
What would it take for Elms to return to virtual instruction?
It's part of that dashboard meeting we have every morning. There's different metrics. So we have thresholds for the number of quarantine spaces still available on campus, the number of cases we've actually had, the number of cases in the community. All of those different things come together, and we have that discussion literally every single morning to make sure we're still in a good place. So with all of us combined, once we hit certain thresholds, we would then potentially make a decision to go virtual again.
Jonathan Scully is the Vice President of Enrollment at Elms College in South Hadley. Thank you so much for joining us on And Another Thing.
Great. Thank you.
Next on And Another Thing, we get a firsthand account from students on how their return to in-person learning is shaping up. This is And Another Thing on New England Public Media.
This is And Another Thing. I'm Maya Schwader.
And I'm Dara Kennedy. We heard our last two guests insist on in-person education, that it's far more superior for students at both the secondary and college level. They also describe precautions they say are keeping most students quite safe from COVID-19. How about we check in with a couple of real students right now, members of the Bradley family in Providence. We'll start with Olivia Bradley, who is a sophomore at Springfield Central High School. Thank you for joining us, Olivia, here on And Another Thing. Let's get started here. Is this what you imagined high school would be like right now?
No, I didn't. It's very shocking and very different.
Tell us what is shocking about it.
Just the new, like, being back around the people after this year and a half is just really different from what it was like before. And yeah, it's just nothing feels the same anymore, but there's kind of mixed feelings about it.
Yeah, as we're talking about what the new normal is, what's made you most comfortable being back in person with your student mates?
What's made me most comfortable? I think the mask really helps. The social distancing does help. It's not completely like as I think we would expect it to be with such a, like, with COVID happening. And it's such a serious thing, but it does help.
Were you nervous to go back to in-person learning?
I was nervous for many reasons, of course, because of getting sick, and a lot of the cases are rising, and it's definitely nerve-wracking.
What did your parents tell you? How did they prepare you to go back to class? And or did they give you the option to, you know, think about it, how you want to approach this school year?
No, I wasn't given the option. And I was honestly eager to go back to school and have some, like, normalcy in my life. I was fine with going back as long as precautions were taken.
As a high schooler, you have proms and you have school dances and football games and homecomings. How are you gathering with your friends safely?
Well, there's like a limit of people that can go to these events. So we just like plan out and, of course, wear our mask and social distance and take precautions as far as that. But that's, I mean, really all that we can do at this point, and get vaccinated as well.
And we hope that your brother is doing well as well. I know that he is up in college at Colgate. And so we want to say to you guys, thank you for being here, but just remain safe out there. Thank you, Olivia, for joining us on And Another Thing.
Thank you.
As we've talked about on this show, the statewide 7-day rate of hospitalizations and new COVID cases dropped a bit this week, but it's still nowhere near the all-time lows we hit in June of this year. So to help us understand whether this is a good sign, we have Dr. Esteban Garcia on the line. He's the chief medical officer at Cooley Dickinson Hospital in Northampton. So Dr. Garcia, we know you don't have a crystal ball, but looking a bit at what might lie ahead, are these numbers from this week encouraging at all?
Yeah, thank you. I do think they are encouraging. I think it's, well, still some time will tell, but I do think they are encouraging. We've seen a kind of a persistent but steady slight decline.
Winter is coming. People are going to be indoors. Do you expect it's going to be a difficult winter?
So I think it really depends for the winter on whether or not we, you know, continue to just press to get people vaccinated. I think that's probably, you know, our primary responsibility now is to make sure that folks understand how they can protect themselves and their family is still to get vaccinated against COVID, but also against the flu. So I think it's going to be really important to get vaccinated against both those if they haven't been as of yet.
Speaking of the flu, can you imagine a time when the COVID is not so serious, when it's treated more like the flu?
Sure. So unfortunately, I do think that COVID will be with us, you know, on an ongoing basis. I don't think we're going to get past COVID. I think it will be with us. But I do hope we get to a point to where it is treated like the flu and it responds like the flu, where we're able to vaccinate, you know, on an annual basis and really just kind of keep it at bay as long as folks are vaccinated. I think that will be important. And I do think that's in our future, I hope.
Doctor, do you have any words of wisdom for people who might not want to get vaccinated and still want to stay safe?
Sure. So I think that the best thing to do, obviously, is to get vaccinated. And I think it's going to be really important to get our children vaccinated as soon as the Pfizer vaccine becomes available for children ages 5 to 11.
Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Esteban Garcia.
Thank you.